Summer is usually a great time for food choices for people in Wisconsin. Backyard gardens, farmers markets, grocery stores brimming with fresh produce. But for a lot of people, they don't have those choices because school is not in session. A lot of kids get their nutrition during the school year, so we need your help. St. Vincent de Paul has a food pantry that gives your neighbor in need some of the same choices you have. But to keep it going, we need your help, your donations, support the food pantry. And you can do one of a couple things. Drop off an extra bag of groceries from the store or your local farmer's market. Also, a $50 cash donation feeds a family of five for a week. You can organize a food drive, whatever it takes to keep that food pantry going this summer while the kids are at home. Let's do what we can. Here's what you do. You contact St. Vincent de Paul at svdpmadison.org. That's svdpmadison.org. Let's work on this together. And welcome to another podcast at slysoffice.com, brought to you by the United Steelworkers and great local sponsors like Madison Computer Works, S&R Remodeling, St. Vincent de Paul, and many others. Joining us now, Madison attorney Marilyn Townsend, who just won a big case in front of the Wisconsin Supreme Court, which is for workers. That is no small feat. Marilyn, welcome to the show.
Thank you. I'm delighted to be here, Sly. Thanks for having me on.
All right. Tell us about the root of this case, how you got involved, and what transpired.
Well, the key thing is that your viewers may not realize the Wisconsin Supreme Court decided 7-0 to award unemployment benefits to my client. What happened is she had been denied benefits under a new law passed in 2013 designed to make it more difficult for workers to obtain benefits. She, as a cashier at Walgreens, had committed 8 cash handling mistakes over 80,000 in a period of 20 months, and was determined under this new law to be ineligible for benefits.
So normally in the past in Wisconsin, in order to lose your unemployment benefits, there had to be some sort of malfeasance, correct?
Absolutely. It was called gross misconduct. But when the legislature passed this new law under Governor Walker, they were very transparent in stating it was too difficult for the employer to prove misconduct, and they believed too many workers were getting unemployment benefits.
Now, who pays for unemployment benefits?
Well, it's a combination of contributions from the employer and the federal government.
Okay. So, but when it comes to unemployment benefits, it's not a lot of money, right? This isn't, you're not getting rich. This is just to keep your head afloat while you look for another job.
Absolutely. My client was practically a minimum wage worker at Walgreens when she was fired suddenly one day. She had no other source of income, and her unemployment would have amounted to $158 a week just to give her transition funds till she found a new job. But she was out on the street. She was denied benefits under this new law, and she had nowhere to go.
And this is all because, what, she didn't make correct change? Is that right?
Some cash handling errors, 8 of them. Part of them was not giving the correct money, but there were a number of different things which initially the agency said were cash handling errors. But the Supreme Court properly pointed out that they were all different, and the statute limits denying benefits to those workers whose errors are inadvertent, which is what happened in my client's case.
All right. So did they strike down the Wisconsin law,
or did they say that there was a misinterpretation at a lower court level for determining that she didn't deserve this benefit?
What they essentially said is read the law, and if you read the statute, it is very clear that one or more inadvertent errors cannot disqualify you for benefits. But Sly, what was so frustrating as a lawyer representing this woman is it seemed so simple to us, but we kept losing because, in our view, neither the agency or the lower court was looking at the plain statute. It says one or more inadvertent errors cannot be used to deny a worker unemployment.
All right. So how were they misreading it? How were they justifying her termination?
Well, simply put, they were not looking at the law. They were looking at the general language that says substantial fault disqualifies an employee from benefits without looking at the limitations to that statute.
Can they not read a statute?
Sly,
I don't mean to be glib here, but...
You know what, Sly? When I took this case as a volunteer attorney at a free clinic, I thought it was so clear. I told the law student, just follow me, shadow me, and I think we'll win this. No one was more shocked than me to lose it repeatedly based on not reading the statute.
Tell me the different levels that you lost then. Did you lose it at circuit court first?
Well, initially, the employee applied for benefits, and an investigator denied her benefits, saying she was involved in gross misconduct. I represented her at the hearing. We lost by the administrative law judge, who said it wasn't gross misconduct, but it was fault. I appealed it to the Labor Industry Review Commission. We lost again. I appealed it to Dane County Circuit Court judge, and he just said, I'm affirming the agency. At that point, I was so concerned as a lawyer that the plain meaning of the statute was being ignored, and concerned that this poor woman wasn't getting the minimal benefit she was entitled to. So I appealed it to the Court of Appeals, and we got a 3-0 decision in our favor, saying the plain statute requires her to be given benefits. So, Sly, I thought we had won. I had thought it was over. My client was looking forward to getting what she thought would be $4,000 in benefits. But then the government told me they were taking it to the Wisconsin Supreme Court in an attempt to get us reversed.
So the government, the state of Wisconsin, appealed the decision, not
yes.
Walgreens.
Right, because once Walgreens finished at the hearing, they sent their representative to challenge her. Then they stopped filing briefs, and it was the government we were dealing with.
All over $158 a week.
Absolutely. And it was a client who had been homeless part of the time she was working at Walgreens. Just a wonderful woman who had was trying her best. And she was truly the working poor, working so hard, but never getting her head above water. And then suddenly being fired and not getting any transition money.
Let's zero back to the, which circuit court judge denied her the benefits?
Well, the case went before Judge John Albert, who retired. He's no longer on the bench.
All right. Did he not read the statute?
Well, what Judge Elbert said in his oral decision to us was that he thought it was a case of simply under the law deferring to the government agency. He said he didn't, or he referred us to the government's brief that basically said you don't revisit what an agency does. Whereas I argued this is a new law and they weren't following the plain meaning of the law, which said one or more inadvertent errors is not substantial fault.
A circuit court judge felt that an agency itself is king, ring supreme, and not the law?
Well, the judge indicated in his decision that he thought he needed to defer to this agency because it was charged with enforcing the statute. And of course, we vigorously disagreed because the law is that when it's a new law, the agency doesn't have the expertise that warrants deference.
You know, I wonder, how often does this happen where someone goes to court with little to no means, no power, and this woman obviously happened to be very lucky that you came along and were volunteering at this clinic, and you put, I imagine this case cost you a pretty penny. I'm sure you were doing this pro bono. She didn't have any money to pay you.
Correct.
So, but how often do people just, who don't run into a Marilyn Townsend, how often do people just not get their proper grievance before the bench?
Well, I've been concerned. I've been practicing law for 30 years, representing a lot of individuals, and sometimes I believe that the cards are that courts may not always listen carefully to the little guy's arguments.
Is it because they're not walking in there with a, you know, $500 an hour attorney, or is it because they're marginalized in society by a lot of people?
Well, it's most lawyers will tell you when you're up against the government, you have a big burden because many courts will think the government, with all its authority, maybe is right, and many of us lawyers feel we won't get the careful consideration that any party is entitled to when they go into court. I certainly felt in this case that there was a rush to judgment in that the government was deferred to without carefully considering our arguments. And I felt somewhat vindicated by the fact that 10 appellate court judges decided in our favor, 3 on the Court of Appeals, and then in the Wisconsin Supreme Court, it was unanimous. 7 judges saying the statute clearly provides benefits. But
that is remarkable. I want to talk to you more about that. We'll just take a quick break. Marilyn Townsend with us at sliceoffice.com, brought to you by the United Steelworkers.
If you listen to this podcast, you clearly appreciate quality. Jeff's Guitar Clinic in Fort Atkinson is a multifaceted guitar shop offering guitar instruction, new and used guitars and amplifiers, and all accessories. We offer guitar repair of the highest quality. Instead of experiencing the total hassle of a big box store or a snarky boutique, take the scenic drive to Fort Atkinson and experience what total customer satisfaction is all about. Call 920-723-1733 or visit jeffsguitar.com. Jeff's Guitar Clinic. We love guitars.
We're talking with Marilyn Townsend at sliceoffice.com, brought to you by the United Steelworkers. She won a case before the Wisconsin Supreme Court representing a worker who was fired for inadvertent errors, and the woman got her unemployment. Help me with the pronunciation of this woman's name.
It is Lila Overton.
Okay.
Oh,
Okay. And she has another job now? She is employed?
Well, right. She struggled here in Madison after she lost her position and then eventually moved to Chicago, where she works for Walmart currently.
So I want you to explain what happens when you have to prepare to go before the Wisconsin State Supreme Court. Is this the first time you had done this?
It's my first appearance before the Wisconsin Supreme Court, correct.
All right. What do you do to prepare before going up in front of that intimidating body?
Well, I do many things, and I've put in many, many hours. But one of the things I did was visited the Supreme Court on 5 or 6 occasions and watched other lawyers in oral argument to get a sense of how the 7 justices responded to the lawyers and the type of questions the lawyers faced.
All right, so you did your homework in that area. Then, so what happens? You go before the court and you make oral arguments. Is that right? Do you submit something ahead of time?
Right. Prior to doing oral arguments, there are briefs to be written. Your written arguments, and also other parties opted in. The Wisconsin AFL-CIO filed an amicus brief. The Wisconsin Employee Lawyers Association filed an amicus brief, which is a friend of the court brief. So in preparing for oral argument, I carefully read all the amicus briefs. I carefully read the brief filed by the government and spent untold hours writing our brief, reading cases, and trying to be prepared for any question that I might be asked from any of the 7 justices.
All right. Some of those justices are pretty conservative. What do they throw at you?
Well, let me back up. Because we won in the Court of Appeals, the first lawyer at the podium was the government lawyer. And he, 1 minute into his oral argument, Justice Ziegler threw him a question and said, "Counsel, what is the definition of inadvertent error?" And as I was sitting at the other table, I was very happy to hear Justice Ziegler focus the argument on that part of the statute. So that was one thing. When I got up after 30 minutes to present my argument, one of the questions was, how do you decide if they're inadvertent errors? And I said, well, you look at each error, and based on the facts and circumstances, you can reach that conclusion. It's what agencies do. At that point, Justice Gableman had said to me, was I stating that an employee could make an error every day, 364 days a year, and I would say they were all inadvertent? And I responded, Justice Gableman, I have represented workers for 30 years, and I guarantee you that workers are fired fairly quickly for making errors. It's the employer's right to do that. But the only reason my client, Lila Overton, probably didn't get terminated was because she was so conscientious, was always on time, would work weekends. And I said, it's clear from the facts. These are all inadvertent. And so that was the type of questions, because the government argued she had 8 errors. Maybe 4 of them were inadvertent, but after that, they were no longer inadvertent. I thought that was a weak argument, but the court might have accepted it, but it did not. it essentially said, you look at each error, and your listeners should remember that. If anyone is challenged on unemployment for making mistakes, be sure they emphasize, if true, that they never intended to make a mistake. They were trying to do their job the best they could, and that's my experience working with folks for so many years.
All right, so you got a unanimous decision on this. She got her unemployment. But I take it you were not particularly pleased that Wisconsin made it harder for people to get unemployment. Can you give me a case, a situation now where people used to qualify for unemployment, but now it could be denied and unjustly so?
Well, I was just representing a worker the other day, and that worker had been denied unemployment for making a number of cash handling errors for a credit union for which she worked. I took that case, but I'm horrified that they seem to be examining some of these situations and still denying benefits to people who make mistakes on the job but don't do so intentionally. So what I am seeing is people still being denied benefits for substantial fault, and even though
even though you won this case, you're telling me that the state of Wisconsin, the unemployment hearing examiners, are still making decisions based on this misinterpretation of the law.
Well, what happened the other day is the investigator had denied the benefits. We appealed it. When I represented her at the hearing, we got it reversed. But this woman was, this woman from the other day was fortunate to have a lawyer. Most workers are so intimidated when they get a denial of benefits that they don't appeal it. So what I'm afraid of is the workers who are getting denied benefits based on substantial fault and then are afraid or don't know any better about challenging it, and or don't have a lawyer. The other day I made it clear at the hearing that these were inadvertent errors. But many workers don't have access to this information.
Well, let me ask you this. Wisconsin made it tougher to get unemployment. Under the previous law, do you think there were a lot of people getting unemployment that didn't deserve unemployment?
No, I don't think so at all.
So do we have any kind of statistics now on the percentage of people denied unemployment and going up? Is that anything you've been able to track?
Well, what we do have is when the substantial fault law went into effect in 2014, it was expected to save the state or $19.1 million. My colleague, another lawyer, Victor Forberger, has done some studies that shows more millions than that are no longer going out in the form of benefits. My belief is, and we don't have the firm statistics because it's difficult to get that from the state, is a lot of workers are losing benefits based on making mistakes on the job, being found to have committed substantial fault, and not having access to information or lawyers to challenge that. The amount of benefits being paid out has dropped dramatically.
Where does one go if they can't afford a lawyer and they want to challenge a decision like that?
Well, we have here in Madison set up this unemployment clinic that runs out of the Labor Temple on South Park for the last 30 years, but that doesn't help people outside of Dane County.
Right. Now, this is pretty remarkable, and it, you know, losing a job is a very, very difficult thing. You're very unsettled. It's almost like a death in some cases. And so sometimes it's very hard for people to focus on dealing with the legalities and then to have the injury to the insult to injury of having a denial of unemployment benefits is really destabilizing, especially if they can't find something right away.
You are absolutely correct. And the people most impacted are the working poor, in my experience over many years of looking at this. And the woman I represented the other day, we had a Spanish interpreter in the room because she had a language barrier, but somehow she had the wherewithal to find the clinic, and I was able to look at her issue and think, boy, we have to help her on this. But it is very tough. People are very vulnerable, and it's not fair, it's not right, and it's not many times not legal.
Sort of denying the scales of justice.
Well, absolutely. And it's I've always believed everyone's entitled to a fair shake. Everyone's entitled to have the law applied to them equally. But I know from lawyering for so many years that it's difficult for regular folks to articulate their grievances under the law, and there's a lot of injustice that occurs.
Well, with your help, this woman beat Walgreens and the state of Wisconsin.
Well, she did, and I am so proud of her, and she is so proud. She stands taller, and what's beautiful, Sly, and I see this a lot, you never know when people will have an opportunity to fight back. And she was very proud, and she said to me, I don't want this to happen to other people. And again, I am very proud of her dignity, her intelligence, her strength. And she was there in the front row at the Wisconsin Supreme Court, and I introduced her to the justices, and they saw there was a human being behind this case. She wasn't just a statistic.
Did you call her with the good news when the decision came down?
I did. I did call her, and she was very happy, and when I finally got the checks from the state, I brought them to her at Walmart in Chicago, and
you drove down to Chicago and took her the checks?
Yes, yes. It's very special. And
how did you not have a tear in your eye when you handed her those checks?
Well, she's had some tough times, and she deserved this. And the Union Labor News, their June issue, has a picture of her and I, her getting her check.
I just saw it. I just got delivered to my house. So,
right.
Marilyn Townsend, thank you for what you do. That's a remarkable, remarkable story, and I hope you're proud of what you accomplished.
Well, I am proud, and it's a chance to give back and empower people in a good way.
Marilyn Townsend, thanks for coming to SlysOffice.com.
Thanks, Sly.
Making stuff matters. Because when we make things in America, America makes it. American workers and families make it. Our communities make it. Consider this. For every one manufacturing job in our communities, 5 more jobs are supported. Manufacturing jobs pay an average of 10 to 50% more than service sector jobs. That allows working families to support their local businesses, schools, emergency services, and more. Creating 2.5 million new manufacturing jobs would mean at least $100 billion for our economy over the next decade. Domestic manufacturing is the green economy. It's among the cleanest, most efficient, and productive in the world. That's why the United Steelworkers and our more than 1 million members and retirees are fighting so hard to protect and grow manufacturing. Because making stuff really does matter. Join our fight. Visit usw.org and like us at facebook.com/steelworkers. Support American manufacturing. Buy American. Buy Union.